As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
What is going on, everybody? Happy Good Friday. It is April 18th on a Friday. Glorious weather outside. Cannot wait to go out and about and getting ready for Easter weekend. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, Charlie Longbury until 5:30, and then we're going to have game two of LSU baseball against Alabama. Nail biter for you Tiger fans out there last night. The Tigers trailing most of the game and then using those middle innings to mount the comeback. Tigers taking down the Tide 11-6, earning that crucial victory in game one of the series. Little bit concerning seeing Cade Anderson getting touched up in the game, but head coach Jay Johnson not concerned about that as they at least got the victory. We'll see how Cade responds in his next outing, which will be a tough one, though, against you-know-who, Tennessee.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to be like, oh, man, we're a little nervous. They won, what, 11-6, right? It's a 5-run win. It just, you know, this is kind of the...
Well, they were down 5-1, which is...
No, what's going on? But it's just kind of funny to look at the final score and be like, oh, we were worried about this team. I don't know. But
baseball's a funny game.
Baseball is a funny game. I've been watching more MLB this year than I will have typically because I have... The
League Pass?
Yeah. Well, is it League Pass? I don't even know. I don't even know. But, you know,
extra innings.
This is a funny time of year for baseball in general because around the country at least, not necessarily in the South, but like some of these teams have been playing like games in like 30 degrees. And you can tell why is this guy in a slump? It's because he's cold. That's why. We don't have to deal with that down here, but I think it is funny.
Right, when you see the big face wraps on guys yeah, coming up to bat, yeah. You're like, this doesn't feel right for baseball.
Well, unlike of all sports, you know, you got to hit you get one in on the hands, right? that hurts a little bit more when it's 30 degrees out there, especially like going up to. I watched a series with the Red Sox and the Blue Jays, and it was at Fenway, and I was like. You can tell that one of these teams is from Canada and is kind of used to cold weather, and the other team was just like, I don't want to be here.
But Toronto plays in a dome, or they have it.
Yeah, but they're still from Canada. They're dealing with the cold.
They live there part-time. Maybe.
It's where they go. It's where they play. Continue. Yeah. I don't know.
Looking at some NBA action tonight, we get the play-in tournament wrapping up. Miami Heat taking on the Atlanta Hawks in the first matchup.
Okay, I have a take here. Okay. Yeah. The scheduling for these play-in games is stupid.
Well,
that's
about
my take.
The late night part of
No. Okay, so you have four teams. It's the 7-8 play-in each other. Then whoever wins goes on.
Yeah.
The 9-10 playing each other. And then whoever wins the 9-10 matchup goes on the road and plays the loser of the 7-8 matchup. But instead of doing it sensibly, which would be having the Eastern Conference games on Tuesday and then the Western Conference games on Wednesday, they have both 9-10 games on Tuesday and both 7-8 games on Wednesday, which means that Thursday, yesterday, there's no basketball. And then two games tonight. If they just did it by conference, they could have just had an elimination game last night and an elimination game tonight. Who are they marketing to that's going to sit through two basketball games on a Friday night?
On a good Friday, too.
Right. So, you're just wasting a day of ratings. It doesn't make
any... That's why the NFL dominates.
I was sitting there last night with nothing to do, being like, why isn't there a good basketball game on? And it's because we have back-to-back games tonight. That is just not... like the NBA just does not understand their own viewership, I feel like. It doesn't make sense.
Ooh, NBA.
I don't know.
Well, the late game this evening, we got Mavericks taking on the Grizzlies. Like you said, I don't know if I'm going to be tuning in for that.
Yeah, well, I think that's going to be a good game.
At least that's an 8:30 tip-off. These nine tip-offs, it ends up being like 9:15, 9:20.
Yeah, that's right.
And like by 10-whatever, Steve's already sleeping on the couch.
Well, usually what happens is I turn the game on, and my wife is like, why are they playing so late? And I'm like, because they're weird. They like to, you know, they're in California. I don't know. But no, I'm actually looking forward to that. I probably won't end up watching it. But the Mavericks-Grizzlies game, I think the Mavericks are going to be a fun team to watch because – anytime you have a team that has spent like half the season with everyone telling them they don't have a chance, and they have a bunch of guys on that team that have won titles, like Klay Thompson, Anthony Davis, some of these guys, like, okay, we're going to go out there and try to embarrass people, right? We're going to try to prove a point. And they remind me of the Heat from a few years ago, the Heat team that went in as the 10 seed and went all the way to the finals, because everyone spent so much time being like, they don't have a chance, we're not even going to talk about them. And then all of a sudden, they just kept beating other teams. So I don't know. Like I don't think the Mavericks are going to take down the Thunder in the round one, but I do think they're going to beat the Grizzlies tonight. And I do think that it's not a matchup. If I won 68 games in the regular season, that's not. I don't want to face a team with Klay Thompson and Anthony Davis on it in the first round.
Memphis actually a 5.5-point favorite at home this
season. Yeah, they're not going to cover that. They're not, because Ja Morant rolled his ankle. Ja Morant's ankle is not right. And I just don't think that team knows how to win an elimination game. I don't. I don't think they're going to play well. Desmond Bane's going to make some shots. I think Klay Thompson kind of got the lid off in that game the other night. You know, if you go back to last year, he had like the worst game of his life in the play-in loss for the Warriors. And I think he's going to go out there tonight and just rain threes, because it kind of felt like he just figured it out. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see Klay put up like 40. The Mavs are winning that game.
And, oh, yeah, we've been talking about everything but the NFL draft, just ticking down to the big event.
That'll yarn.
Yeah, in six more days, we'll have round one today. And a week from today, we'll be talking about the Saints' first-round selection.
Yeah, the NFL draft is kind of fascinating because it's the only event where we spend, I don't know, 5 months talking about it only for pretty much everyone to be wrong. Like, no one's right. If you got, like, three picks in the top 10 right, you did a good job. In your prognosticating, and that includes the first pick, which we know.
It's just amazing to me. We're still seeing these not talked about much draft prospects all of a sudden skyrocketing into the first round.
Well, see, you say that. You say skyrocketing, but it's just because people had them lower than teams did. That's what happened. Like, when we say skyrocketing, it just means that people's understanding of where teams are is catching up to where the teams have been.
Come on, though. Nobody was talking about this Louisville quarterback until like 2 days ago.
Yes, they were. They were, though. They were. People, we've been.
Not as a first round guy.
As a fringe first round pick, yes. He's been on people's boards a lot higher than the simulators would say he is. So people have kind of ignored him. But this entire process, people have been saying, you know, a lot of teams are high on Tyler Shuck. A lot of teams think, you know, I've talked to people that have said, oh, Tyler Shuck is the second best quarterback in this draft. And then everyone's like, ah. But then you see, like, oh, well, now, teams are considering in the first round. How could they do that?
Well, it's because ESPN's Matt Miller has mocked them there in the latest mock draft at number 9.
I don't think he's the number 9 overall pick. It would scream Daniel Jones to me. It would be a Daniel Jones pick. Right, that's what it would remind me of. The Giants took Daniel Jones at number 6. Everyone's like, he's probably a guy who would have been on the board, because they had two first-round picks that year. The second one was Dexter Lawrence, which was a pretty good pick. I think it was like 18th. But they were like, he would have been on the board at 18. Why would you take him at 6? So that's how it would come off. And if you remember that draft, Giants fans were booing the pick as it came in at number 6 overall. And I think that's how Saints fans would approach it. Even though I think Tyler Shuck's going to be a pretty good quarterback, Number 9 overall would feel like, ugh, because it's just going to be hard to sell to people. But that doesn't mean it's a bad pick. It just means it's an unconventional pick.
Yeah, to me, like I said, I'm seeing all of a sudden the talk and the buzz has been around this kid, you know, the last couple of days, and it seems that that's been the new QB the Saints are enamored with going into the draft.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's been the case for a while. They did have him in for a workout last week, so it's not like this
had a lot of QBs
coming out of nowhere. Well, sure, but I mean, it's not like this is coming out of nowhere. Like, we do know they've been talking about him. I think he's a guy that I would love to get at number 40. It would just be a tough sell for me at number 9. But quarterback's weird, man. If you think you have that guy, the Saints have already been in the situation once where they thought they had their quarterback of the future.
Right, and they got scooped.
And I'm sure they don't want that to happen again. So, you know, it would be a weird thing to see that happen at number nine. I think people would lose their minds on social media. But
no, not fans.
Yeah. But they're always right. I mean, come on.
We are here on Sports Talk 530. Like I mentioned, it'll be pregame coverage. LSU versus Alabama baseball, game two of that series. 6 o'clock first pitch at the box. We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. Be back with more of our draft talk right after this on WWL. Back here on a fun Friday edition of Sports Talk, a good Friday edition, and getting ready for our Easter weekend. Gentlemen, we've seen some great offensive tackles and former Saints offensive tackles retire. Teron Armstead, and now, no surprise, Ryan Ramczyk joining those ranks. Unfortunately, a debilitating knee issue caused the Ramczyk's career to be cut short. But man, oh man, he was a force when he was able to be on the field. It just, unfortunately, really towards the end too, just so many of that knee issue kept him sidelined. And you just saw him battling through stuff. I always laughed when I would see these guys on the sideline, you know, doing the Saints radio stuff. And you see the offensive linemen with their braces on their arms, their shoulders, on the knees, and just doing whatever they can to be on the field. Ryan Ramczyk definitely had that big knee brace on him trying to play through everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ryan's career is a good example of why, like, you know, when you say, like, why are these players so intent on getting those contracts and making sure they're maximizing the value of their careers? Because NFL careers are fleeting, man. I mean, he basically had until 28, right? Like, some guys play later in their career. You know, Teron Armstead's career lasted a little bit longer. But, I mean, Ryan basically had six seasons in the NFL, kind of whatever you want to say. Like, his first four seasons, he was very healthy. He missed one game. And I think it was a rest day game. It was one of the, like, a Week 16 game that didn't mean anything. I think it was against the Panthers. But then, you know, he had that knee injury in 2021. But that was the year that, you know, Druid retired. Sean stuck around. You know, Teron Armstead missed a bunch of games. Ramczyk missed a bunch of games. So he was playing a lot of games without either starting tackle. He came back the next year. And if you recall, there was a lot of rest days, right? Like, the Saints did everything they could
absolutely
to extend his career and try to create a scenario that he could fight through and be as healthy as possible. He got through. He played 16 games that year, right? Yeah. It wasn't perfect. He was battling a lot that year. But he got through it. The next year, that's when things started to pile up. And, you know, I remember talking to him in the locker room, you know, after the injury came out and he was going to miss a few games. And you could kind of see it on his face. Like, he was asked kind of straight up, like, do you think this could be career ending? And, you know, usually guys won't go down that path of, like, we'll find out. He was just basically straight up like, yeah, I've talked to doctors. They said that's definitely a possibility. And once you're willing to admit that about your own career, it's like, that's real, you know, and he never got on the field again. And it's a bummer because, you know, he's 30 years old now, right? That's, you know, it's not old. It's not young, but it's definitely not old. I mean, DeMario Davis.
5-6 years you would think as an offensive lineman.
You'd think he'd have a couple more years left. And, you know, I knew he was done the first time I saw him. You know, he hadn't retired, obviously, but last year I saw him on the field before a game. And he looked like he could play tight end. He probably dropped like 50, 60 pounds, which I'm sure was relative to the knee and trying to take some weight off. And that's, I mean, you see a lot of these offensive linemen, they're not meant, people aren't meant to be 300 pounds. Like, they're 300 pounds because they have to be. And you see, like, a guy like Joe Thomas, he's like a fitness model now.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's not unusual, but it is unusual for a guy who's technically not retired. That's why it was kind of weird. But no, it's a shame. At the same time, yeah, you look at that 2017 draft, and I think Ryan is often the afterthought in that way where, you know, you just got him from day one. He never missed a beat. And we've seen, like, Trevor Penning, right? Like, Trevor Penning was a guy that you brought in as a first-round pick. A lot of development had to happen. Ryan came in as about the surest thing you can have. The funny thing is, like, his most recent tweet was a draft night tweet saying, I'm ready to get to work. He hasn't tweeted again since then.
A man of many words.
But no, it's easy to forget, like, 2 years earlier, three, I can't remember, but the Saints had a similar situation where they had two first-round picks. The second pick was Stephon Anthony, right? This time, you know, it was kind of it was a boomer bust pick. They picked a high-floor guy in 2017, and, you know, he is as big a reason as anybody not named Breeze that team won the most games in the NFL over the next 4 years, that team won four straight NFC South titles, had a bunch of playoff success, obviously didn't get to the Super Bowl, which is a disappointment for anyone during that era of Saints football. But no, it was a great career for him, so, you know, congrats to him.
Questions about the offensive line. Maybe that's what the Saints do at pick overall at number nine. We'll talk about that and a lot more about the upcoming NFL draft. Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network, joins us right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk this Mello Friday as we head into the Easter weekend, getting ready for the NFL draft. And
nice.
To help us talk about all that, Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network. Thanks so much for the time this Good Friday, man. How you been doing?
Doing well. It's a Good Friday, as you said. We're officially less than a week out from the NFL draft, so really looking forward to it.
I was taken back just today, you know, Justin, seeing the NFL latest mock draft from ESPN, and an analyst there had all of a sudden now Tyler Shuck jumping up to number nine overall to the New Orleans Saints. It seems like this New Orleans squad has been connected to just about every quarterback besides Cam Ward in this year's draft.
Yeah, certainly. You know, I think that would be the stunner of day one if something like that were to happen. I don't see it. You know, as we get closer to the draft, I think it's pretty clear that at most we're going to get three in the first round. I personally think it's going to be two. Tyler Shuck should just not be in that conversation. I mean, appreciate what he did at Louisville this year. It was nice to see him healthy and get through a season. But this is not a first round quarterback, and I don't think it's certainly not a top 10 quarterback. You know, one who's been in college for what I think it was 6 years. So I don't know who you said wrote it, but it's. I don't know what we're doing if we're putting him in the top 10, nine overall in mock drafts. I just don't see that happening on Thursday, not one bit.
I think it's kind of a projecting the Saints to do something that makes people say, what? Because that's what they...
It's what it made me do, for
what
sure.
What they do so well. But, you know, I think Shuck's an interesting guy. And, you know, Steve and I were talking earlier. It's like, why is he suddenly jumping up? And people are talking about him now. I think it's a situation where teams have been talking about Tyler Shuck for a while. I think there is a lot of interest in him from NFL teams, but he just kind of flew under the radar for a while in the mock draft-averse of everything, right? Like, I don't think he was, you know, high on simulators, so everyone was running mock drafts and he wasn't showing up in theirs. But I do think that he is a guy that teams are high on. I agree with you. I don't think he's a top 10 guy. But what is your read on him as a quarterback if the Saints do end up with him maybe a little later in the draft, maybe late first round, early second round?
Yeah, I'm certainly intrigued. Again, it was nice to see him healthy this past year, right? He had some devastating injuries throughout his college football career, and he's been around a bunch of programs, right? So nice to see him healthy. Thought he played his best football this year, certainly. I think he can make every throw. I think he's got the required arm strength. He's got good size for the position. Where it starts to fall apart for me is under pressure. You know, if you look at everything, and yeah, it's true of a lot of quarterbacks, but the completion percentage, the advanced metrics, the turnover-worthy play rate, certainly the turnovers, everything just goes up to an uncomfortable range when under pressure. So that's where I have pause. I'm a little concerned about the decision-making when under duress. Now, again, I think he can make all the throws. He's got the size. I don't think arm strength is an issue. I think he's got good velocity. The ball pops out of his hand. But I think the ability to sort of handle pressure is one I still got a major question about.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good question for a lot of guys. And, you know, I've seen, I think it was Greg Cosell who was talking about, you know, quarterbacks that get sacked a lot in college. The data suggests that, you know, that doesn't go away when they get to the NFL. I think it's a conversation to have around Shedeur Sanders. He led the NCAA in sacks last year. You know, what do you land on that? Do you think that, you know, that can be explained away as poor offensive line, or do you have to kind of look at that as a potential issue for a quarterback coming up from college to the NFL?
It is a potential issue in my evaluation for him and any quarterback that deals. I mean, Will Levis was the same thing in college. You know, he got sacked quite a bit. He got sacked a lot for the Titans this past year. So with Shedeur, I'll tell you what gives me a special, you know, a lot of pause. And I spoke to a scout said this to me the other day. When you watch him versus Cam Ward, for example, you know, the two quarterbacks that were quote unquote neck and neck throughout this process, when Cam Ward's under pressure, he moves side to side. He moves up. in the pocket to buy time. This is exactly what a scout told me. You watch the Dor Sanders, he goes back. He moves backwards when he's under pressure. That's not going to fly in the NFL. There is no path to success escaping the pocket backwards, right? Just disaster waiting to happen. So for me, I am incredibly concerned about that. There's a lot about his game I like. I think he's probably the most accurate quarterback in this class. He probably has the highest football IQ. He is so good pre-snap, you know, sort of almost sort of Brock Purdy-like in that sense, where he doesn't have the strongest arm, not going to win with arm strength and velocity. He's going to win with dissecting what the defense is doing pre-snap and executing post-snap, right? That's where he wins. But for me, the lack of pocket awareness, the sack numbers, yes, their offensive line wasn't great, wasn't even good, but I thought he did bring a fair bit of it on himself. I think the arm strength is below average, same with the velocity. And then, I don't see the type of athlete that's going to navigate pressure at a successful rate. So there are certainly some red flags for me in his evaluation. And that's a great one by Greg Cassell. I'm on the same page there.
Looking at some LSU talent in this draft, a lot of talk, obviously, Will Campbell, some consider the top tackle prospect. Just wondering your stance on Campbell, where he could possibly end up in the draft. And then somebody really that hasn't been talked about maybe as much, I feel like, is Emory Jones Jr. and where you think he could end up going on what day.
Yeah, regarding Will Campbell, it's interesting, right? Because, you know, he's the favorite to go number four overall to the New England Patriots, and he's been the betting favorite in that market as well. I'm not convinced, you know, as someone who covered Mike Vrabel for a long time there in Tennessee, he was pretty strong opinions about short arm tackles and wingspans for tackles. So I have a hard time thinking that he's going to take this guy at four and ask him to be the blindside protector for Drake May, franchise quarterback there. The interesting thing about Will is if he doesn't go number four to New England, I'll be honest with you, I start having a hard time figuring out the landing spot in the top 10. You know, I think he could slide all the way to like 13 to the Miami Dolphins if it's not four to New England. So be interesting to see. I always feel for these guys because when you watch the tape, I mean, the tape at left tackle is quite good on Will Campbell, right? There's no denying that the tape is impressive, but these measurements matter, and they matter to almost every single NFL team. Every evaluator is going to tell you. And it's not just that he's short-armed and the wingspan. It's historically short, right? So he would be almost a historical outlier to be a success story at left tackle. I love the tape at left tackle. I feel bad for him. I almost wonder if you let him fail at left tackle first is what they say, and if he does fail, you kick him inside to guard, but you give him that chance at least to play tackle. It'll be interesting to see where he lands and how they handle that. With Emory Jones, I came into this past year with higher expectations. I don't know if you guys remember. I mean, there were preseason mocks that had him in the first round.
Right.
Didn't live up to that billing. It's going to be day three. You know, it's certainly not going to be the second or third round. I think it's probably the fourth or fifth round. And I think there's a good chance he kicks inside to guard as well.
You know, just keeping on LSU, I'm curious what your takes are on Mason Taylor and just the tight end class in general, because there's some really intriguing names. And I think you could see, you know, multiple first-round tight ends, which doesn't happen that often. How do you see that, you know, Mason Taylor kind of fitting in there? And what are your takes on, like, the, you know, maybe the top five, six tight ends and how they could kind of land in this year's draft?
Yeah, I think Mason Taylor is an exceptional prospect. In fact, I said on another show earlier today, I think there's a chance he sneaks into the back half of the first round. Like, if you're looking for surprise first-round selections, I wouldn't be shocked if he gets there, 25 to 32 range. Just a really dangerous pass catcher, up the seam, difficult assignment in coverage for linebackers and safeties. Now, he's a pass catcher first. I'm not going to ask him to do a ton of inline blocking. That's okay. You know, they don't have Travis Kelce to do that either, right? When you're such an effective pass catcher, you got to understand how to use those traits to the best of your disposal for your offense. So for me, Mason Taylor is super, super impressive. He's my tight end three, you know, behind the obvious two, Tyler Warren and Colston Loveland. Again, I think he can go back into the first round. I think if you're one of those teams that's into those tight ends, but you don't get one of them early, again, you know, potentially them going both top 20 in Warren and Loveland, if you get Mason Taylor in the second round, I think it's a hell of a consolation prize at tight end. Again, he's my number three. For four, I go Elijah Arroyo out of Miami. Similar player. I think he's a very dangerous pass catcher, tough assignment for linebackers. At number five, I go, maybe it's a bit of a surprise, but I really like the inline guy from Oregon, Terrence Ferguson, who I think does both. In fact, you know, he's a better inline guy than Arroyo and Taylor are, but he's not quite as doesn't have quite as much upside as a pass catcher. Still going to be a good weapon in that area, but I don't think he's got elite upside. The other two, you know, Taylor especially, LSU, I think there's elite upside there as a pass catcher. Very excited to see where he lands. Don't be shocked if it's on Thursday.
Yeah, you know, I was out at LSU's Pro Day last month, and the thing that impressed me with Mason, and you know, you don't want to draw too much of these, you know, workouts and whatever. He put up 28 reps on the bench press, and he did it impressively. Like, sometimes you'll be watching, they'll kind of struggle through the last, like, five or six. He got through, like, 25 clean, and then it was like, oh, how many is he going to get? And like, to me, that's the question. Does he have the strength to hold up at, like, you know he can run routes, you know he's an athlete. But I think that's the question for a lot of guys, like Harold Fannin, you know, like guys like that, like, okay, I know you can catch the ball. I know you can run and jump and leap. Can you be a blocker? Do I have to have a second tight end to throw on the field anytime I want to run the ball? You know, how do you feel about, you know, that part of the game? Like, it's hard to, you don't see a lot of tight ends coming out these days that slot immediately into a, you know, all around tight end role.
Right, right. And there are a couple of good blockers in this class, but again, not a ton of pass catching upside. You know, Mitch Evans out of Notre Dame, Jackson Hawes out of Georgia Tech, very, very good blockers. When it comes to Mason, you'd like to see the strength, as you said, the bench press reps there at the pro day. I think the technique is still very much a work in progress. They didn't ask him to do it a ton. Again, we always tend to use this as such a negative. They shouldn't have asked him to do it a ton. He is such a dangerous pass catcher. And a lot of these teams in the NFL, they've got a designated guy that can do it. That's why you see guys like, you know, what was Anthony Fasano play 12 years in the NFL because they're so good at it. So I think these teams nowadays, they're okay with it. If you're going to give me just terrific upside as a pass catcher like he does, I'm probably going to have a number two or three that can do it anyway. And, you know, guys like George Kittle, that's a unicorn, man. You know, a guy that's that elite at both, it's so rare. Usually you're going to get one or the other, and I'm totally fine with making Mason Taylor my primary pass catcher.
Justin, always great stuff from you, man. Curious, too, with that number nine overall pick that the Saints do own, if you're running the show for the Saints and you looking at the draft board, who do you think one will be there for them and who would you end up taking for this squad?
Yeah, I think the three names that I keep coming back to, and it's funny, all at three different positions, it's T-Mac, right? It's Ted McMillan out of Arizona. I look at Shamar Stewart out of Texas A&M. And I look at Armon Embo out of Missouri, the offensive tackle. I think if one of them is there, I'm fairly confident the Saints would make that pick. I think the Missouri tackle is probably the one they would prefer. I'm not convinced he's going to be there. But, you know, it's still a bit of a transitional year for New Orleans. No one knows what's happening at quarterback. You know, Fuaga, I thought, played well at left tackle last year. You're keeping him there now. I would take the Missouri right tackle because I'd be so confident in his ability to slide right in there. And I know I've got my bookends for the next 10 years. If he gets there, I think that's the ideal pick for them. At receiver, I think they could use a big-bodied boundary X. I think the depth chart there is okay. It's certainly not in terrible standing. They brought back Brandon Cooks. Hopefully, you know, Shaheed is healthy. Of course, Olave, phenomenal player. But I think I'd like to see a different kind of guy, towering presence on the boundary. Ted McMillan would offer them something they don't have. And then again, Shamar Stewart, you know, it's a high risk, high reward, right? Production wasn't really there. But you look at the body type, it's moldable. The measurables are out of this world. The combine is one of the best combine performances of the past 5 years. I'm fairly confident they're going to take one of those three talents.
All right, Justin, really quick here. You know, I always get a kick out of asking you this every year because the number always makes me laugh. How many prospects have you talked to so far during this process?
I'm about to, by the end of next week, I'm going all the way to Saturday, by the way, because I've got so many. I'm going to be publishing on day three still. We're going to be at about 215.
215 prospects. If anyone's questioning the credentials here, there you go.
We got 215 prospect interviews up on the Draft Network. I conducted all 215.
Awesome stuff, Justin. Check out his great work at the Draft Network. Always appreciate your time and enjoy the wild NFL draft. We'll see how things end up shaking out.
Pleasure. Everyone hop on the Draft Network and take the new mock draft machine for a ride. You're going to love it.
Oh, man, we've been doing that nonstop. Thanks again, Justin, covering the NFL draft for the Draft Network. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, bringing it to 5:30. That's when we've got LSU baseball game 2 against Bama. Coming back with more sports talk, though. We'll be right back after this on WWL. It is time for the Saints and NFL Draft and WWL's Draft Fest, a festival of football. It'll all start Thursday at 4 o'clock with Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas, and the Saints Draft Preview Show. Appointment listening for all you hoodats out there, featuring the Saints top brass, head coach Kellen Moore, GM Mickey Loomis, offensive coordinator Doug Nussmeier, defensive coordinator Brandon Staley, associate head coach and running backs coach Joel Thomas, plus senior assistant GM and vice president of college personnel Jeff Ireland. We got Michael Parenton, Phil Galliano, Terry Wooden, Terry Joseph, you name it, they're coming on this pregame show. Great appointment listening. The draft show starting Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m., and that'll be followed by the Black and Gold Draft Show presented by Flight by Yingling, the next generation of light beer, live from 504 Golf and Entertainment at 3800 Howard Avenue in New Orleans. Can't wait to check out 504 Golf. It's going to be an exciting show, an exciting Saints draft with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Mike Dettillier, also featuring Deuce Haas and our sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. Hear it all on Saints Radio. We'll be on Thursday, Friday, Saturday on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app.
Yeah, I mean, this year of all years, you should tune in. I mean, how many of these coaches have you heard from yet?
That's
like we've talked to a few of them,
right?
But no one has heard from them in an official capacity. So, like a guy like Terry Joseph, I think he's going to have a big impact on this team, and we'll hear from him for the first time.
And we just got that one, you know, meet and greet with Brandon Staley. So having him with Deuce and Haas, I think, will be great stuff. And anything, all the hoodats will be listening to,
no doubt,
as well. But like you said, exciting time because people have been waiting for this. It's that breath of fresh air coming into the Saints building.
Yeah. No doubt. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully they have a quarterback.
Coming back with more sports talk after the top of the hour news, and then 5:30, we got LSU baseball versus Bama. Be right back after this, folks, on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk as we get into our Bet 365 triple option feature. Guys, I'll lead it off wishing a happy birthday. We've been talking offensive linemen with Ryan Ramczyk, Teron Armstead retiring. Well, the guy that's in the Hall of Fame, Nasty Willie Rofe, turns 55 years old today. It was a great New Orleans Saint that had him to 11 Pro Bowls, also a Hall of Famer. I also played for the Kansas City Chiefs as well. And I don't know, hoping that the Saints leads into my, you know, kind of talking about the NFL draft here as well. My hopes and wishes for this ninth overall selection for the Saints is to try and find some more pieces for the trenches, whether it's on the offensive or defensive line. The offensive line, you mentioned last segment, Jeff, about the fact that, you know,
I don't know where you're going.
Northern Iowa kid.
Trevor Penning.
Thank you.
Wow.
It was on my tongue. I couldn't get it out. If Trevor Penning, it is his last season and he ends up moving on to somewhere else and they don't decide to invest with him, that's going to be a position of need definitely for this team. So why not pick up that, you know, tackle for the future, whether you want to keep Fuaga where he is now or moving back to the other side. But I just think shoring up the offensive line is still a major priority for this Saints squad.
Yeah, and I'll just build off that with mine here. And so you mentioned Ryan Ramczyk. Ryan Ramczyk's going to be on the stage reading out the Saints pick at number 40. So, hey, maybe Ryan Ramczyk can read off the name of the next great Saints offensive lineman. Who knows? I think a guard would be a great pick at number 40. Obviously, Ryan was a tackle, but, you know, they do a lot of the same stuff, right? But no, so just kind of bridging off that, May 2nd is the deadline for NFL teams to decide whether to pick up the fifth-year option on players that were in the first round of the 2021 draft. Is that right? 2021, was that Trevor Penning and Chris Olave? I lose track. But either way, so Trevor Penning and Chris Olave, you're going to have to make decisions on both of those guys. That fifth-year option, I think the thing with that option is people lose track of, it's not just like, oh, another year on that contract. It's another year with a pretty significant
bump
raise from a rookie-scale contract. So you're giving that guy a lot of money for that 1 year. And in most cases, it's going to be a lot more efficient, a lot more a better deal for the team to agree to an extension rather than pick up that fifth-year option. And for Trevor Penning specifically, I see his situation similar to Cesar Ruiz's situation. And I remember that year, the Saints didn't pick up his option. Everyone's like, oh, man, they're moving on from Cesar Ruiz. And it's like,
not so fast.
No, I think that's more likely they were going to extend him. And that's what they did. Trevor Penning's an interesting case because I think how he comes into camp and performs is going to be a big part of that. And he's going to have to convince this coaching staff that they want to keep him around and develop him. I think there's a 0% chance they pick up that option and pay him $16 million for next year. But I do think there's a decent chance that they come to terms on a reasonable contract where you could probably still move on from him after a year if you needed to, and you would still be on the hook for less. Say maybe like a 3-year, $21 million contract, something in that range, with about half of it guaranteed. You're still moving on with less of a burden than that 1-year option. So just keep that in mind. Chris Olave, I think they will pick up his 5th-year option. And the reason is, if he was healthy, if health was not a factor for him, $16 million, which was wide receiver and offensive line, is around the same. For that 5th-year option, that's about what you would be expecting to pay him on that next contract. So it's not really an overpay in that way, and it will give you one more year to figure out whether he is viable at the NFL level. Because right now, I need to see him get through a season without a concussion. That would be priority number one. And I don't mind paying him another $16 million for that 5th year. And if it doesn't work out, then you can kind of cut your losses and move on. But May 2nd. Is when the deadline for when they have to make those decisions, and it's going to be after the NFL draft.
Positive, Chris Olave, at least, we see little clips of the Saints having those work at the facility, and he's been one of the guys you've seen as present right now.
Yeah, looks like he's having a great time. Great beard.
I'm just glad to see him actually in football action. No question.
And that's the thing. We haven't seen him back on the field. Until he gets on the field and gets hit for the first time, I'm waiting for it, right?
Charlie, what you got for us today?
Guys, I'm going with Mark Spears' report today. You talked a little bit earlier about the play-in tournament. Now it's wrapping up tonight. Mark Spears, who's come on this program before a couple times, put out an article talking about Dyson Daniels and how he's a candidate to win NBA Defensive Player of the Year and Most Improved Player this season with Atlanta. And Mark entails, why didn't the Daniels play like that with the Pelicans, right? The former 8th overall pick. And he asked the question, what happened? What made you kind of make this turnaround? Career highs in games played, games started, minutes, which is the most significant aspect here, I think. Just the increased opportunity, because I think he was always a good defender with the Pelicans. And look, I'm not going to act like I've seen a lot of Atlanta Hawks games this year. I haven't. I watched their play-in matchup against Orlando, and he looks like the same player offensively to me. So maybe that boost is just a little bit because of the increased minutes. Granted, he averaged 3 steals per game this season, which is obviously incredible. The nickname, the Great Barrier Thief, is also pretty awesome.
That's good.
Now, with Dyson Daniels specifically, I read a little bit of the article. It's a good one, so anyone that wants to go check it out, it's on Anscape. He mentions Dyson himself, that the reason he's made this boost and that he wasn't that same player, quote-unquote, is because of himself. It's nothing having to do with the Pelicans or, the opportunity with Herb Jones in front of him and everything like that, even though he did get that incredible boost as far as games played and games started this year in Atlanta, but he's obviously made the most of his opportunity there.
Yeah, so Dyson Daniels led the NBA in steals this year. He had 229 steals. It's the most steals in the NBA in a quarter century. You have to go back to 1999. Gary Payton had 230 steals. We're talking about Gary Payton. So that's 229 steals. That's crazy.
And listen, once again, I don't think his offensive game is developed that much, but he also mentions in the article that whereas other players work on their offense, he works on his defense. So, listen, the Pelicans still have Herb Jones, who is an all-world defender on their roster. Obviously, he was injured basically the entire season, but, with Dyson Daniels, he's getting increased minutes than he was in New Orleans, and he's kind of running with it.
What's frustrating is that trade, the returns for the Pelicans. We thought so many great things were going to happen with DeJounte Murray, and unfortunately, the same story with the Saints this year with the Pelicans.
I can't be mad about
DeJounte. No, the injuries just really decimated the entire team, but especially, DeJounte Murray from the jump was in bad standings.
Yeah, from day one, or game one, breaks his hand, season ends with a torn Achilles. That's not good.
Then even had some personal, issues off the court with his mom dealing with health issues.
Yeah, it was just a rough season
all around. So hoping DeJounte can return because, I'm still very high on him with the Pels and hoping to see
player.
That.
He's a good player. I don't think he was the problem. His absence was the problem.
And so many Pelicans there were absent.
Right.
That was our triple option feature. Taking a break. We'll be back on more Sports Talk. Stay tuned right after this. Back here on Sports Talk, getting ready for 5:30. Pre-game coverage, LSU baseball taking on Alabama, 6 o'clock first pitch. Want to get right into our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. James, you've been hanging on. Want to talk NFL draft. What'll be cranking up next week? What you got today, James? Happy Good Friday.
Yeah, likewise to you, bro. Both of you. So hopefully in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about who is Tanner McVee. I'm thinking you already know who he is. He's the backup quarterback over at for the Eagles, 6'6", 231 pounds, runs a 4.7 from Stanford. He's 24 years of age right now, I think. And
you mean Tanner McKee?
The feeling is if Moore doesn't get the guy that he wants, he can go to Philly and get the guy that was a 6th-round pick for maybe a 3rd-day pick. Maybe, you know how he is. He might want a third. But my point is that that's in the offing. The other opportunity would be perhaps something I don't think either one of us would like, and that would be to go to Tennessee and get their backup quarterback, Will Levis. Although I did see Will Levis beat Atlanta in his opening regular season game, and I love that. But they're asking for a 4th-rounder. So I don't see Shador coming here, and it's nothing like I got anything against Shador, but I could see Deion. If I was the head coach, I wouldn't want Deion on my back. That's just me. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy. He seemed like a decent guy, but I don't think he has the mouth to deal with the publicity that Deion's going to want. Because I actually see Deion wanting the Cowboys' job, and I could see that happen. I could see him going to Dallas at 12 if they don't pick up Gentry. But anyway, that's my thoughts. Who do you want it for pick number 9?
Yeah.
If they go through with the Tanner McVee deal, the best offensive lineman, because the kid needs somebody to block for him. I don't really like Will Campbell. I like the guy that Charlie brought up. Yeah, I prefer him. He's far more athletic. But neither one of them are left tackles. But I could see him playing left tackle. The other option would be get somebody in the secondary, but hopefully not Will Johnson. He runs too slow. Even though we're gonna be playing a lot more zone. And the only other guy, I think maybe Mason Graham, the defensive tackle, may fall.
We'll see if he's around.
Yeah, but he's got short arms too. but either way, the guy that I really love, I think Mike shot me down. I kind of thought that was nonsensical for him to tell me that.
Who's your
James
pick?
Pierce, what big, my I like James Pierce. The kid, 6'5", runs a 4.7 at linebacker, and he'd be the perfect 3-4 guy. They say he's got issues, but if you want to Google the guy from San Francisco, just Google his history before San Francisco picked him up. The NFL has they pick and choose who they want to cover up. He can't be any worse than him.
Gotcha. Right. Thank you. Appreciate it, James.
No, I mean, Tanner McKee's interesting. I don't think he's a guy you're trading for to start, even if you're going to get him. And I understand why you're looking at Tanner
McKee.
Making
the connection, right.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Kellen Moore coached him last year. I mean, that's a pretty low-level move. We'll see. Yeah, I guess the question is, how committed is this team to Spencer Rattler? And what does Kellen Moore think
about of Spencer Rattler, right?
We really don't know. And it's going to be...
Shoot, we don't even know what he thinks of Jake Haener either. I know everyone seems to have drawn conclusions that the next in line would be Rattler.
I mean, it just makes sense. But we'll find out. And yeah, I mean, I don't think you're making a decision on Shedeur Sanders based on, I don't want to deal with the drama Deion might bring. It's got to be, okay, is he... do you have a good grade on him or not?
Right.
Like, that's what it comes down to. And I just don't think that they have a great high grade on them.
Real quick, as we head out of here, gentlemen, your favorite Easter candy? I'm going with Heavenly Hash from Elmer's.
See, I'm not a sugar guy. I'm a chocolate guy. So I'm just a Cadbury egg dude, man.
Okay. Charlie, what you got?
Starburst jelly beans, Jess.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
Elite.
Hope you have a good Friday, everybody, and a great Easter. We'll be back on Monday with more draft talk here on WWL. Enjoy LSU baseball. Game 2 against Bama coming up right now. Who dat?